wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Davide.
Kia ora, Mili. Hi, Rosetta.
Kia ora.
Hi, how are you going?
Not too bad, not too bad. I recovered from the start of the semester, which is always traumatic.
I feel you, man.
Almost there.
I know, you made it. You did make it.
I did.
Yeah. So, what have you got for us?
Oh, interesting stories this week. I found three very cool stories. One about people and what they are attracted to in terms of partners or potential partners. And this is a study, is a research that has, that was born from a collaboration between University of Queensland in Australia and the University of Stirling in the UK. And the research groups basically conducted an experiment involving speed dating. So they set up a speed dating experiments, let's say, exercise.
That would be fun to do.
I guess. So, you know, we all know the old say, well, opposites attract. They wanted to study if effectively people that have opposite looks or interests would effectively attract each other. So they set up these experiment in which 680 adults, males and females. So they studied this within the context of heterosexuality. So males and females, they basically set up a true speed dating where people were allowed to meet and talk for approximately 3 minutes.
Only three?
Yeah, it's very speedy.
Yeah,
let's
that's
say.
Super quick.
It's really quick. And after each of these meetings, multiple meetings within the experiments, the couples were asked to fill up a questionnaire in which they were asked, you know, what they thought, how they were attracted to the partner that they just met, to the potential partner they just met. So they collected something like 1,200 interactions between the people. And these included people that were coming from same ethnical background as well as people that were coming from different ethnical background. And the research team also took pictures of each participant that they fed into a model, and they could, you know, link the looks to the responses of the questionnaires, basically.
Wow.
And they wanted to know what really attracts people, what brings people to like each other. So what did they find? They found something really interesting and probably not exactly what we would expect. So it looks like similarity really plays a great role when selecting or narrowing down the potential partners that you would like to be with.
Amazing.
So people seem to be more likely attracted to other people that have the same ethnicity, and they look like them, or their traits resembles the ones of the partners, let's say.
That sounds kind of fair, because if you think about it, you are looking for compatibility, aren't you?
Yeah, and one of the questions actually addressed this question pretty, the question in the questionnaire addressed this topic pretty straightforwardly, let's say, because people from the same ethnicity, they think that other partners from the same ethnicity are more understanding and more trustworthy somehow. So this is like getting close culturally, that kind of builds a safeguard, you know, between partners. And and the other thing is that women tend to rate men proportionally to their masculinity in this study. So more masculine men are rated higher by women. And women rate other women higher if they lack masculinity.
Oh,
that's
gosh.
Basically the three key findings. So you're attracted by people that look like you, roughly. And you're attracted by people of the same ethnicity. And women rate women based on the lack of masculinity higher. And masculinity is like a good trait for men to be rated by women, according to this study.
That is
so interesting. I guess the looking like someone being attractive to you is like partly because there's a sense of like familiarity there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of comforting.
Yeah.
Well, it must be nice.
Being reassured, being comforting, you know, finding
but
comfort.
But also sounds almost a little bit narcissistic that you're looking, that you find people that look like you attractive, which is kind of funny.
I was thinking about the same thing. This is like an extreme example of narcissism, right, by all of us.
It could be Narcissus looking into the pond all over
exactly.
again.
Exactly. falling in love with ourselves, basically.
Falling into the pond. And moving on, what else have you got?
So I've got a story which is very interesting about cicadas and their wings. They seem to be magic in the sense they seem to be strongly antibacterial. It has been known for a while that the environment that surrounds cicadas' wing is very bad for bacteria. So cicadas' wing can kill bacteria. The problem is that we don't know how, and this can be very useful for us to develop new material that that have antibacterial properties. Right? Mm. There's like big lines of research that look into this. So in 2012, there was a paper that discussed the antibacterial properties of cicadas, and now a group at Stony Brook University analyzed and reconstructed the microstructure of cicada wings in order to provide a mechanistic understanding of how this bacteria killing happens. And they noticed that within the microstructure of cicada wings, there are micropillars. They are just 150 nanometers long. So they're very, very short. And a nanometer is 1/1,000,000th of a meter. Now, this is an experimental group at Stony Brook University, and they didn't have enough resolution. And what brought resolution to their study was molecular simulations. And I was very interested in reading this because that's exactly what we do in my group as well. But they teamed up with another researcher called Jean-Michel Carrillo, and he's a computational biophysicist in Oak Ridge Lab. Now, Oak Ridge is a very big center for molecular computing, so they have very huge supercomputers and a new supercomputer called Summit. So what Carrillo did was providing expertise in simulating these cicada wing nanostructures. And they basically modeled these pillars, and they looked at how bacterial membrane, or anyway, something that could resemble that, would break down in the presence of these pillars. And then what they found is that these pillars are able to actually damage this membrane structure, which would resemble the bacterial membrane, in order to make them leak out content, right? So that the bacteria could be killed. But there is a twist to the story.
Oh, no.
Because killing bacteria is not really a problem. We can do it pretty efficiently. The problem is that the debris that accumulates upon the killing of bacteria then creates the substrate for other bacteria to colonize the same surface.
Oh, no. It's and a catch. Yeah, it's a loop.
Yes. And that's where most antibacterial films, let's say, fail, right? Because you kill the first attackers, let's say, and then others colonize on top of them. But cicadas' wings are actually very good at not making this happen. And this was unknown. And what they discovered through molecular simulations is that cicadas' wings are porous enough so that the debris that leaks out of bacteria, when these nanostructures actually damage the bacteria, they can percolate through this porous material and doesn't make the debris accumulate so that other bacteria cannot colonize the same surface.
Whoa.
And that's how they seem to do it. So not only they have like damaging structures, but they also clean themselves up. And it's not apparently the movement of the wings that cleans the wings. It's just like the ability of these structures to be percolated by the debris.
What amazes me is that we needed a supercomputer to figure this out.
Yeah.
It's so complicated. I mean, how do you even get the first idea of maybe a cicada's wing is antibacterial?
Yeah, yeah. I know. People observing the weirdest things and then science builds upon itself, right?
It totally does. We've got another weird discovery after this.
Yes. It's about plants, and they are more amazing than what we initially thought. This is from Washington State University, and it's a study that tells us how plants respond to touch. And we know that plants do respond to touch. However, In this case, researchers, what they did, they studied the cellular environments of plants using biomechanical methods. And of course, I mean, plants have the big disadvantage of they can't move. They can't escape prey. They can't escape, you know, bacterial infection. Yeah, they have to stand still there. And they have evolved all sorts of amazing techniques in order to sense the microenvironment. One of them is the ability to sense pressure. So they can tell when you touch them.
That's amazing.
And what these researchers did very briefly is they probed the cells, single cells within plants, 12 plants in 84 experiments with glass rods, which were more or less big as a human hair. So very, very tiny. And so the first surprising finding is how finely this response to touch is regulated in plants. So they can tell when you start touching them and when you stop touching them. What happens is that when you touch like a plant cell, there is like all sorts of influx of calcium ions inside the cell. And this creates wave of calcium ions that basically mediate the pressure response. Now, the other thing that is interesting is when you stop touching them, within 30 seconds of stopping them, stop probing them, they can tell that the pressure has stopped. So they can tell when you start touching them, when you stop touching them with an extreme precision, let's say.
Gosh.
So they have these waves that form and dissipate. And now the other very mind-blowing thing is that they don't need nerve cells. So humans and animals, we need nerve cells, right? Without nerve cells, we cannot sense. Plants can sense with any cell. So they're called pavement cells. And everywhere you touch, so you can trigger these waves of calcium ions to develop inside the cell. And that came because we have membranes. They have membranes and walls outside. And this research, and just to close everything up, this research can be very, very important to understand how plants sense pathogens in order to combat pathogens. So there are like caterpillars that bite plants and they damage their wall, and that's how they sense touching by pathogens or even fungal infections like the kauri dieback or myrtle rust that are big problems in New Zealand and beyond, let's say.
Oh, it's heartbreaking that. And now I'm going to feel bad for walking over grass forever.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we have to think twice before we pick flowers and walk on grass and touch plants ever.
Yeah. Plants have feelings too. Just to close off, we've got the best joke about the cicada story. I tried to study the cicada rhythm, but I fell asleep. Oh. Now people use cicada sounds to go to sleep. Oh, I thought that was pretty good. Well, thank you so much for another week of great science.
Glad to be here. Thank you,
Davide. Thank you, Motat. And thank you, science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to Motat, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.